Había baños, regaderas y vestidores y comedor. De las que se les pidieron los exámenes médicos, más de la mitad, no mucho más, como dos terceras partes, no les practican exámenes médicos a los trabajadores. Muchas de ellas no declaran ante Hacienda, otras tienen niños trabajando en minas de carbón y no tienen registrados a los trabajadores con sus salarios reales.
En febrero de 2006, en el mismo municipio de Sabines, estado de Coahuila, ocurrió la peor tragedia en la historia reciente del país en la mina Pasta de Conchos. Una explosión mató a una docena de trabajadores y dejó atrapados a 65 más. Los directivos del poderoso Grupo México, concesionarios del yacimiento, los declararon muertos casi inmediatamente. Las familias continúan exigiendo el rescate de los cuerpos. De nuevo, Carlos Gerardo Rodríguez Rivera, coordinador del área educativa de CEREAL, el Centro de Reflexión y Acción Laboral.
Lo más terrible de todo en cuanto al caso de Pasta de Conchos es que después de 5 años, los restos de 63 de los 65 aún están en el socavón. Ni Minera México, siendo el principal consorcio minero del país, ni el Estado mexicano en 2 sexenios ha tenido la actitud humanitaria sensible de devolver los restos de esos mineros a sus familias para darles sepultura.
Los familiares de los mineros de la región han llevado su caso a la Organización Internacional del Trabajo y el próximo lunes se inicia en Ámsterdam una campaña internacional de denuncia en torno a las condiciones de trabajo que enfrentan los obreros en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Décadas de conflicto armado en Guatemala han dejado una profunda huella en esa sociedad centroamericana. Si bien los enfrentamientos han terminado, la violencia no ha desaparecido de la vida de los guatemaltecos y particularmente las guatemaltecas que son víctimas de asesinatos diarios. Helen Mack, presidenta de la Fundación Mirna Mack de Guatemala, indicó que durante la época del conflicto, la violación sexual fue un arma de guerra muy utilizada y hasta el momento no ha habido ningún enjuiciamiento sobre esas violaciones masivas de mujeres. Subrayó que el índice de asesinato de mujeres en su país es tan alarmante como el de Ciudad Juárez en México, que ha sido mucho más difundido en todo el mundo. Helen Mack participó en un encuentro organizado por la ONU Mujeres en Nueva York sobre violencia de género. En una entrevista con Carlos Martínez lamentó que la violencia del pasado esté todavía tan presente en Guatemala.
Yo diría que la violencia del pasado, como no hubo, dijéramos, un hasta aquí y un nunca más, adquirimos una cultura de violencia. Por lo tanto, Guatemala hoy es uno de los países más violentos de la región centroamericana. Y eso también se puede observar en la violencia contra la mujer. Hoy, casos como los desmembramientos de las mujeres, la hazaña con que se mata a la mujer es mucho más grande que cuando matan a un hombre. Entonces hay un ensañamiento todavía más perverso hacia la mujer. Bueno, nosotros es en todo lo que es la lucha contra la impunidad y obviamente hemos llevado casos ante el sistema interamericano y en el caso de mujeres todavía no han habido casos todavía para el país Guatemala concretamente que pueda visibilizarse un poco más y sea un caso paradigmático.
¿Qué debe hacer la ONU para ayudar y para revertir todo esto que le sucede a la mujer en Guatemala?
Yo creo que debe de insistir en que las políticas tienen que ser integrales, porque normalmente se quedan como políticas a seguir, van en paralelo y no se introduce desde la legislación misma. Pese a que Guatemala ya como una de las medidas hizo la ley del femicidio, esto todavía no ha sido suficiente.
¿Cuáles son los principales desafíos que se deben abordar en lo inmediato y en el más largo plazo?
Yo diría que a nivel de justicia legal debe ser es un tema todavía pendiente para el caso de Guatemala, pero tiene que ver con la justicia, con la impunidad, porque ni siquiera las faltas son aplicadas ahí. Y luego toda la parte económica, socioeconómica en que viven las mujeres, que lo que quieren al final es también un cambio de situación, todavía sigue siendo excluida y marginada de todos estos procesos. Y ahí ONU Mujeres creo que debe de lanzar la campaña, si bien es cierto ya está, y está hay muchos territorios donde se quiere declararle territorios libres de violencia contra la mujer, pero tenemos que entender que también son procesos culturales que son lentos y desde esa perspectiva el Estado de Guatemala como tal todavía no lo ha asumido como propio. Tenemos ahorita un mecanismo que fue propuesto por sociedad civil que se llama la Convención Internacional contra la Impunidad en Guatemala y que puede, yo diría, jugar un rol todavía antes de que termine su mandato. Será cuestión de discutirlo, pero ese debate público todavía no se ha querido dar y eso también pasa y atraviesa por todo lo que es el fortalecimiento institucional.
¿Qué le parece el papel que tiene la CICIG para ayudar en estos procesos?
Yo creo que todo lo que es contra la impunidad es positivo. Como guatemalteca, claro, juega un papel bastante importante. A veces quisiéramos verla todavía mucho más fuerte, ¿verdad? Pero uno debe entender que a veces estos juegan papeles políticos y que no necesariamente pues van por provocar todavía mucho más debate, sino que pasarlo como ser políticamente correctos, que desde las víctimas no es eso lo que esperamos. Sí, a veces cuando son objetivos políticos se quiere decir que no vaya a molestar mucho al país, que se toleran ciertos márgenes y eso hace que no se vayan los problemas estructurales. Y uno lo que quiere es acabar el problema estructural precisamente para que no haya una repetición. Y ahí es donde ese respeto, ¿verdad?, que diplomáticamente debe darse, es lo que hace que el status quo se mantenga.
No morirá la flor de la palabra. Podrá morir el rostro oculto de quien la nombra hoy, pero la palabra que vino desde el fondo de la historia y de la tierra ya no podrá ser arrancada por la soberbia del poder.
Estimados amigos y amigas radioyentes del informativo Pacífica, les habla Fernando Velázquez, director de este proyecto alternativo que se transmite en la radio KPFK, al igual que en emisoras de Estados Unidos, México, Colombia y Venezuela. Como sabrán ustedes, la radio KPFK está en recaudación de fondos con el fin de reunir unos cuantos dólares para su presupuesto, pagar sus gastos y mantener la independencia editorial necesaria para hablar de la paz. Desde 1959, esta emisora ha estado transmitiendo programas que exploran las razones y causas de la guerra, los antagonismos y conflictos entre naciones, grupos e individuos para promover la paz. Ustedes pueden ayudarnos a hacer esa noble tarea llamando al 818-985-5735. La KPFK no solo ha traído al aire voces de líderes indígenas y aborígenes de varios continentes, sino que revolucionarios, pensadores y líderes espirituales de varias corrientes. Eso con el deseo de que ustedes, hombres y mujeres de bien, tengan opciones y alternativas en los medios de comunicación. Los y las que escuchan el 90.7 FM acá en Los Ángeles saben perfectamente que el informativo Pacífica trae para ustedes todos los días los temas más relevantes, las noticias más recientes y las voces de actores y protagonistas detrás de la noticia. Ustedes pueden ayudarnos a hacer esa noble tarea llamando al 818-985-5735. 818-985-5735. Todos sabemos muy bien que en estos momentos atravesamos una histórica crisis financiera y económica. Los desempleados suman decenas de millones en el país, otros tantos millones han perdido sus casas, decenas de miles han tenido que irse a vivir con sus familiares o a la calle. Sin embargo, el gobierno se hace de la vista gorda, ya sea este demócrata o republicano, su énfasis y prioridades son el creciente apetito del complejo industrial militar. Es por ello que hoy más que nunca debemos tener una radio de todos, una radioemisora al servicio de todos que cuestione la autoridad, que haga la denuncia, que consiga datos importantes sobre las artimañas, los trucos y manipulación de la información que hacen los poderosos para aumentar su riqueza. Hagamos el esfuerzo por mantener una radioemisora para todos, independiente, fuerte, inclusiva y multiétnica. Antes de despedirme, quiero decirles que toda persona interesada en escuchar el informativo Pacífica en su totalidad pueden hacerlo visitando en internet www.kpfk.org o www.kpfk.org. Gracias por llamarnos y por su apoyo y contribuciones. Y por supuesto, gracias por acompañarnos esta y todas las noches de la semana. El número a llamar, una vez más, 818-985-5735. Se despide su amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, on the air at last, is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned.
No homeland, no problem.
that, of course, was Land by Five. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. On the air at last, I'm told, and that's what seems to be the case, because I can tune myself in here on my own radio, or the studio's radio, and hopefully you're coming across on my radio. Hey, a particular thanks to all those people who put us back on the air from Dennis on up, or on down, depending on how you look at it. And listeners, the more support you provide for us, of course, the more quickly we'll get on the air once we get off again, or at least that would be my hope. If you want to help out, you can write us a check, kick down a post office box 7811, Santa Cruz 95061, or better even still, go online to freakradio.org, which you may be online already listening to us at. And you can also find out other information, schedules. You can become a part of the collective yourself if you have a show you want to put out, present it to us. And there's open spaces for people to come on the air as new broadcasters. So think about that. And also, if you want to call into this show, which will be running for 2 hours from 6 to 8, it's called Bathrobespierre's Broadsides, as in Robespierre plus bathrobe, Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. You can call in 831-427-3772, 427-3772, also 469-3119, 469-3119. And either of those numbers I will attempt to answer. It looks like I got my ringer on. I got my eyes on the silent ringer in case the ringer goes out without my knowing it. And like that. So think about giving a call in if something that I'm saying or discussing floats your boat or piques your anger or piques your interest or raises a question of some kind, any of those things. Let me know what you think, and we'll take it from there. I'm going to begin today by playing a tape which I partially played before some weeks ago. I ran into activist Roger Mensch, who is a founder of the Americans for Safe Access chapter here, or one of the founders, in Santa Cruz. That's a group that concerns itself nationally with defending the rights of medical marijuana patients. And I was really discouraged. Discouraged isn't right the word. Pissed, really. Maybe discouraged, covered by pissed. To run into Roger about a month and a half ago and learn that the third time in his third battle with authorities, and this is the last time he spent many months in jail because he couldn't afford the bail, on the issue of selling medical marijuana up in Felton at his Hemporium, he finally succumbed and pled. In the past, he simply fought the charges all the way to the California Supreme Court. And I think he lost in one situation in a bad decision by the California Supreme Court. We're going to talk, you'll hear us talking a bit about some of that, as well as, for me, which is even more important, the local villains and heroes around these issues, because it's important to identify people you want to support and people whose positions you want to oppose, particularly those who are shrouded in myth, just like the notions that kind of flop around and cover Santa Cruz like a fog, that we're somehow a liberal area around medical marijuana or marijuana use generally. This is the fantasy that masquerades as truth, when in fact the busts here, like everywhere else, for marijuana have been going up, and the attempts to protect people that the voters have put into place, Measure K, have been disregarded and in fact sabotaged by the city council and the city bureaucracy. And, of course, the local prosecution, D.A. Bob Lee, has been going after medical marijuana providers on the theory that anyone selling medical marijuana who is not a very close member of a collective that grows and sells to its own members is operating illegally in violation. That is to say, Bob Lee's notion seems to me to be in violation of Proposition 215 and of the general understanding statewide that dispensaries are dispensaries, and if you have a card and a genuine need for it, you have a right to go in and get it. You shouldn't have to have a genuine need for it. You should be able to go get it anyway. I think the whole thing is ridiculous. But given that that's the law, it's doubly obscene that Bob Lee, the DA, continues to go after people, probably to keep the federal grants or the drug enforcement team stuff rolling in, that are perfectly entitled to it, even under the absurd law. So let's hear a little bit about that, or let's hear a little bit of the Mensch interview, Roger Mensch, M-E-N-T-C-H, Mensch. You can Google for him and find more about him. He's also written about this issue on Santa Cruz Indie Media and elsewhere, as have I. Most of the stuff you'll read about him is older, but you can probably get some of the new stuff. Anyway, let's hear this interview, most of which I played before, but it bears repeating.
I'm talking with Roger Mensch, who is the has owned and run the Hemporium, which is a medical marijuana dispensary in the Felton area. And Roger has been twice pursued by Santa Cruz district attorney and authorities and sheriffs for selling marijuana. Allegedly to non-patients or out-of-the-county patients, or those were previous cases, right, Roger?
Well, I'm not sure which case you're talking about.
The previous two busts that you had to do with Hemporium sales to either out-of-state people or people without cards?
No, all my sales were to people that had medical marijuana cards. And they were all in the state.
What were you accused of?
On the first case, second case, or third case?
First and second.
Well, both of them was charged with sales, cultivation, and cultivation and sales.
To people with medical marijuana cards, or did they claim they didn't have cards?
They all had medical marijuana cards. Even the undercover in my third case went out and got a valid recommendation, supposedly a valid recommendation, and then arrested me after.
What was the basis on which the two cases were pursued, that even if you have such a card, that such dispensaries are illegal unless you are an immediate caregiver? Was that the claim?
It's different. The first case, we went with a caregiver defense, and they denied me that defense. And then, the appellate court ruled that I should have been allowed it and reversed my conviction. Then the Supreme Court ruled that, no, I'm still convicted. And so the second case...
Before you go on to the second case, so the conviction was based on the fact that you were selling marijuana to people with cards, but that was still not enough... or recommendations, because the very act of selling was itself illegal?
Well,
what was their claim? In other words, why? On what basis did they say, I mean, they don't go after Wham, they don't go after Greenway, they sell to people, why would they go after you? What was their specific claim of the difference in your case?
Well, they didn't give me no difference in cases. They have gone after Wham. Right, they've gone after him, but
The local DA. I'm not sure that he has. The feds have. I know that the local DA has.
Yes, yeah, the local DA has a couple times, but that's all evidently resolved, with the federal case and all that. My case, was a huge issue of trying to allow a caregiver to sell to patients like the 215 provided.
And were they claiming you were making undue profits? I mean, again, I'm trying to understand if there is any difference, or was simply they decided to go after you because they didn't like the way you looked, or they didn't like the way, in other words, my impression was they were selectively prosecuting you, but I was trying to understand things from their perspective. What would they have said was the difference in your case between that and anybody else? Why do they claim that even if you're selling to people with cards, it's illegal? What is their claim?
Well, back in 2003, they said, the DA actually said to one of the patients after my court case, they said they didn't want anybody making money off of marijuana.
Now, were you making profits off this?
I was making reasonable compensation. Right?
You weren't profiteering by your perspective.
No, I wasn't. No.
Did they claim you were? Did they present evidence that you were making large amounts of profits?
Well, they're trying to say. They even said, "Oh, he's got a flat screen TV, mm-hmm. right? A 23-inch flat screen TV." And then they said, "Oh, he's got a BMW." Well, it was a 1996 BMW. And, they froze my bank accounts, and they got like $1,400 They did the same thing in this last case, right? And they came up with the same thing.
As I understand it, it does require a lot of money to actually purchase marijuana and make it available, so that does involve money, but it doesn't necessarily involve money that you profit from. Is that accurate? In other words, you have to actually purchase marijuana, which is expensive, from people in different areas, or grow it yourself if you have that capability, which isn't always the case here in this area. And in that cost, that involves a certain amount of capital. And the claim can be made by the DA, well, see all the money that's involved, but in fact, it's involved in getting the product essentially to the patients, and you are making only reasonable compensation. If you follow my point.
Yeah, I follow what you're saying. Yeah, I had huge overhead. My electric bill was $3,800 a month.
You were growing your own?
Yes. Yeah, I was growing my own, and it was for the collective as well.
And so eventually, the first charge, you were convicted on the first charge and sentenced to jail? The first case.
The first case, I wasn't allowed a caregiver's defense by Judge Stevens, and so it went to the appellate court, and all three judges ruled in my favor, reversed my conviction, and they certified it for publication so other people could use it. And then it went up to the state Supreme Court, and that little word consistently in the law, where if you're a caregiver, you got to consistently take care of a person either in health, safety, or housing. And under those rules, they denied me a caregiver's defense, said that I shouldn't have been allowed one in the first place, and then I was reconvicted.
So in other words, the same kind of... was there a second defense you could have used in that case rather than the caregiver's defense that would have gotten you a not guilty plea, do you think?
Yeah, it's possible, because I had set up the Emporium as a business, trying to stay within the law any which way I could. And, at that time, I went with the instructions of my attorneys or suggestions of my attorneys, and they believed that the caregiver defense would be the best one at that
time. Who was your attorney?
Well, I had numerous public defenders, but it ended up being Amy Buontello from the public defender's office, but there was help from other attorneys as well.
The reason I'm questioning about this is because obviously there's no consistent caregiver activity from either Greenway or Glimekiln, the two monopoly marijuana distribution centers downtown. Could they be prosecuted similarly, or would they have a second defense other than the caretaker defense? Sounds like the caretaker defense wouldn't work for them. Is there a collective defense where they say, we're just running a collective, it's not a caretaker operation?
Well, my understanding is the clubs in the city, they would like to go after them, but politically it would be, I think, damaging, and that's one of the reasons why they haven't pursued it. But, it's like the people have voted in medical marijuana. The police need to stop for pursuing the patients and the collectives and destroying people's lives.
Oh, for sure. But the question, I guess the answer then is they wouldn't have any additional defense, although I think when I talked to Pebbles Trippett up in Mendocino, she seemed to feel that recent court decisions do give them a defense, even if they are not providing consistent care, that they have some other defense. The clubs throughout the state may have that defense, but the district attorney's office, when I talked to them 3 or 4 years ago, said we regard all clubs as illegal. Maybe a collective like WAM isn't, because they grow for themselves, but clubs generally that sell to even to people with medical marijuana cards and recommendations are themselves illegal. And DA Bobley seemed surprised to hear that when one of his DAs said that in my presence, because obviously it contradicts the tolerance policy they have towards lime killed in Greenway in Santa Cruz, and you're saying, it sounds like to me, that's because of political factors rather than any consistent standard or additional standard in the law.
I don't know anything about the standards or anything that the city does with those people.
The DA isn't going after them, and they're doing what sounds like something very equivalent to what you were doing, so I'm just suggesting the reason they may not be is because of a political factor rather than, oh, they're operating differently, they're using a different defense. In other words, I'm not aware that there's a different defense they're using, but I'm wondering if maybe there is, we're not getting into. But the second case, what was a similar case?
Well, it's the first case. Let's go back to the first case. You know, or the other clubs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a lot of money to fight. Where I, you know, the little people don't have money to fight the big system, right?
So what you hear me doing here is trying to find out exactly what differentiates Roger Mensch's Emporium, thrice prosecuted, twice in Santa Cruz and the third time in San Jose, for selling medical marijuana to patients and people with recommendations, from the two clubs in Santa Cruz that are justified and, you know, the only tolerated clubs, the only licensed clubs in Santa Cruz, Lime Kiln, Ken Sampson's club, and the Greenway club, Lisa Milano's club. And I've been critical of both the policies that favor some clubs over others, that freeze out other clubs and give these two clubs a monopoly. I've been critical of these things in the past and still am. But what I was trying to find out in this interview, and I don't know if I was successful or not, was what was the theory under which Bob Lee's prosecutorial staff went after Roger Mensch in 2005, again in 2006, and then in 2010, the San Jose authorities went after him, or maybe it was 29, in these three separate cases. And they're all kind of covered somewhat on Santa Cruz Indie Media. If you Bing or Google for Roger Mensch, M-E-N-T-C-H, putting it in quotes, you'll be able to find all these three cases. So the first one has got a really kind of really colorfully photographed story. Roger Mensch will continue the Emporium, a professional caregiving service, in a photo essay of his court fight by Bradley and V-Man, when old V-Man was doing reporting on it. And there's some fine photos of me there, too, as well as Roger Mensch looking very dapper in his suit and tie and with his partner. And there's V-Man with his crew cut or his haircut. And there's a lot of text and discussion of the first case. And then the second case is also on Santa Cruz Indie Media, Medical Marijuana Forum Thursday, Roger Mensch on trial. Again, this is from August 2006, and there's a lot of references and discussion of that. And then the third case is on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, which is the successor to Santa Cruz Indie Media. Roger Mensch, Medical Marijuana Activist, prepares for third trial in San Jose, in case people want to, you know, read up on this case and try to fathom the arbitrary and bizarre procedures and the cruel procedures used by our local authorities. And I emphasize this because everyone knows that there's a crazy national policy on marijuana, medical marijuana, and then there's an abusive state policy. I'm concerned about our county's people, our city's population, letting the authorities get away with a kind of a witch hunt against medical marijuana people that they don't like, without any kind of justification in the law, and then in a favoritist kind of way, exempt Wham and Greenway and Lime Kiln. And I've also I put in a call to Craig Canada, who does a Sunday evening show at 6 o'clock on Free Radio, who talks almost exclusively about medical marijuana, to kind of listen to review this show as we go along and give me his opinion. I'm going to continue playing Roger Mensch's interview. Again, I ran into him up in Felton on the day he had decided to cop a plea, or after he'd copped a plea on this whole thing, just to get it behind him, which is what many do because they're just tired of this struggle. Some of us will struggle on forever. Others have got better things to do, or would have to apportion and pick the battles and all that sort of thing.
And so, you know, my understanding over the hill in San Jose, they're considering all the clubs illegal over there. And it's actually, the law is very, very unclear. It's so terrible the way the law has been put together here to where, or, you know, they need to stop the police from attacking the patients, man. This is crazy. This is like prohibition days, right? And, you know, it's basically they still want to say that marijuana doesn't have any medical value, right? But the proof is coming out.
Well, reefer madness has proved that it drives people crazy, right?
Exactly.
And a documentary film was put out some time ago. I mean, why don't you simply get what? I see you have your marijuana T-shirt on there, Mensch. I mean, good grief. Anyway, what was the first case you were sentenced to jail?
For those who miss my dry humor, that was dry humor.
Yeah, I was sentenced to 5 days, time served when I was convicted. My second case, I spent 7 days in jail, and that was thrown out because I won. The appellate court came in with his decision, so they decided to drop the charges.
What was the decision of the appellate court that made them drop the charges or that persuaded them?
Well, I won.
On what basis did you win?
The appellate court said that I should have been given a caregiver defense. I should have been allowed a caregiver's defense.
And this was before the Supreme Court had ruled that reversed the earlier decision?
Yeah, well, you got to go through the appellate court before you get to the Supreme Court.
And the caregiver defense is a defense that says that people who are caregivers to medical marijuana patients can sell them marijuana to recover their costs, which is what, in theory, all these clubs operate on, including the Hemporium.
Right, so...
But the case in the Supreme Court was in the first case, right?
Yeah.
And so that hadn't reached the Supreme Court when the second case was thrown out?
No. In 2006, the appellate court came back with a decision, and I was going into my trial in October of 2006, and at that time...
In the second case,
they overruled... They reversed my conviction. I was found not guilty, so they dropped the charges, marijuana charges in my second case, but they're still holding me for probation violations for that case, as well as in my first case, I had some guns and ammo around, and they left ammo at the house from the first time they arrested me. Mm-hmm. So when they came the second time, they got me on a probation violation of a felon in possession of bullets, which they left there purposely. I think it's a trick that they do so they can come back and violate somebody on probation.
How can you say that about our deputies, Roger?
Yeah, right.
So in the third case, it wasn't the district attorney's office locally that went after you. It was the Santa Clara County?
It was both the Santa Cruz Narcotics Task Force and the San Jose, it's called the, I don't know, they have a...
Task group over there.
They have a task force over there that's state. It's a state organization that pays, but it's local police that are involved in it.
But the district attorney of Santa Cruz wasn't involved. It was the district attorney of one of the counties of San Jose or Santa Clara.
I think there's a whole bunch of district attorneys involved. When I was arrested, the cop's phone just kept ringing off the hook, and I was asking who it was. And he said, oh, it's all these DAs calling in saying, oh, you got Mensch under arrest? And, you know, it was like...
You think that Bob Lee might have been involved?
No, Bob Lee, you know, I don't... Bob Lee has nothing to me to fucking do with this, right? It's...
Well, his office prosecuted you twice, though.
Yeah, it's his office, right? But it's... I don't want to even go into that part of it,
okay.
Right? I don't want to go after...
Okay.
Right? The They had a marijuana enforcement team here paid with a DEA grant. Mm-hmm. They're pushing the federal agenda, the sheriffs that were on that team. So how much Bob Lee is involved in that, I don't know. Right? I don't want to fucking be throwing his name in there and shit. And
I'm throwing his name. You're not doing that. I mean, the reason I say that is because his office prosecutes. If they chose not to, they didn't have to, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're enthusiastic about it, but I'm saying that on two occasions, they put up the resources once you've been, taken into custody to prosecute you and to carry out those cases. Sheriff didn't do it. Task force didn't do it. It was the district attorney's office that did it. But in the third case, the district attorney's office was over the hill that did this, right?
Yeah.
That's the one that we're now talking about and that you recently pled to, right?
They ruled that if they call from one county to another county, the cops, if they call from one county to another county, mm-hmm. and you get arrested, either county can have jurisdiction, and so they knew that I would have better luck over here if I stayed in Santa Cruz, so they drug me over to Santa Clara.
I see.
To where instead of having a $10,000 bail like I did in my first two cases, I had a $110,000 bail. And
you stayed in jail for how long under that bail?
Well, I actually didn't have bail for like 5 months, and then we got it reduced to $55,000. And then it came around again, and I was supposed to get out on supervised OR or OR, but they decided to give me another $50,000 bail instead. So, financially, I've been destroyed.
And you paid a bail bondsman to get out?
I'm still paying. I paid monthly payments.
And you are a man who's not exactly in the best of health?
No, I'm not. No, I have ulcerative colitis and back problems and some mental issues.
You look pretty crazy to me there, I got to tell you.
I am.
Indeed. How were you treated medically in jail? Where were you held in jail?
I was in Elmwood for 5.5 months. They medically, I was taken care of.
Were you able to use medical marijuana in jail?
No, of course not.
Do you use it yourself for any medical condition?
Yeah, I do, sure.
And are you now violating your probation by using it? Speaking of the mic.
No, I am not violating it.
Would that be violating it if you use medical marijuana?
No.
So you're allowed to do that?
Yeah, I have a judge's ordered to be allowed to use it.
And what kind of condition do you have that specifically is helped by medical marijuana?
Well, like I said, I have ulcerative colitis. I have back pain problems. I have other issues that I really don't want to discuss right now.
We're going to have to subpoena your medical records, Mitch. That man is obviously lying. So that's a joke, folks. Any thoughts to people out there? There are a lot of dispensaries that have opened up in Santa Cruz County in the last 2 or 3 years. And there's now a county dispensary regulation measure being considered. And recently in Scotts Valley, you mentioned Chris Coulter attended a Scotts Valley City Council meeting where the council decided to ban all medical marijuana dispensaries within its jurisdiction. Any thoughts on any of that?
No.
Remaining a prudent silence. Thanks, Roger. If people want to, get in touch with you or, want to assist you in, I don't know, you're shaking your head. You're kind of through with all this business as best you can.
Yeah, I'm hoping to not be involved in the legal system.
And Emporium is no more the business that provided marijuana to people here and some in Felton and some elsewhere.
It hasn't been in operation since my arrest, February 13, 2009.
Thank you, Roger, and fuck the police and the DA.
And that was an interview I had about a month and a half ago with Roger Mensch, who is at liberty, but considerably poorer, and has spent, looks like, about 6 years of his life recently fighting this stuff. There also was recently some activity at the County Board of Supervisors around a new regulatory law around medical marijuana, which I've been trying to access without a lot of success. I've got a short story in the Sentinel about it from May 3rd, a couple days ago. After a year of debate, the Santa Cruz County Board on Tuesday passed new medical marijuana laws that regulate but do not cap the number of local dispensaries and collectives. And what I want to do, of course, is get to the actual law to find out what it's all about, Alfie, so to speak. The wide-ranging set of rules were welcomed by medical marijuana providers, who see them both as a way to weed out bad seeds and a sign of more widespread acceptance of their operations, 15 years after California voters passed Proposition 215. The board approved the regulations 5-0. They include regulations requiring an 800-foot buffer between two pot clubs and a 600-foot buffer between clubs and schools. A moratorium on new clubs within the county's coastal zone remains in place until the Coastal Commission reviews the regulations, which could take several months. It's not clear how many clubs are located in the unincorporated areas of the county by Tuesday's vote. One advocate put the number countywide at 40. The city of Santa Cruz limits the number of pot clubs to 2, so that makes the county much more liberal than the city, which is kind of a strange turn of affairs. Let's listen to a little music, and then we'll get back to this issue here, that is to say the county regulations around medical marijuana. If you have any comments, questions, or thoughts, I don't know about what kind of questions I can answer, but I'm hoping Greg Canada might want to call in and give us his thoughts on some of this stuff, the Mensch case and also the county regulations, which I've urged him to look into and follow, but he may not have been doing that. I'm not sure. He does have a show coming up on Sunday, and every Sunday at 6 he talks about medical marijuana. So that's a place to go here on Free Radio at www.freakradio.org and 101.1 FM, which is what you're actually listening to for once. So let's hear a little music, and then I'll be right back. We'll be right back. And that was No Shelter, Rage Against the Machine. I'm still kind of probing and pouring my way through the May 3rd Board of Supervisors agenda to see if I can find at least what was brought to the Board of Supervisors as a proposal. They don't have the minutes online as to what was actually passed in case changes were made in it. So all I'm only going to be able to get at this point is going to be the actual document that came up at the Board of Supes for discussion. It may well have been modified. So while I'm doing further research on the air as you watch or as you listen, let's hear some street interviews from about a month ago. I think I may have played some of these online because we haven't really been on the air for about a month. We've been off. But for all of you who missed these exciting interviews, or I'm not quite sure how exciting they actually are, but let's hear some of them now and hear what we shall hear. You can always call in if you've got some comments, some breaking news, some updates. 427-3772 is the number to call, 427-3772. If you want to reach me off air with information that is either confidential or you just want to chat or you've got something to report that you don't think is directly airworthy but you think I should know about or you want to pass on to me, the number to call is, and also if you have any questions, is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. HUFF, as all regular listeners know, is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the sometime now and then civil rights organization that meets every Wednesday. We met yesterday at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific. Everyone's invited. You get free coffee, occasionally a cookie or two, who knows. And we can talk about different kinds of direct actions and indirect actions that might help homeless people and civil rights for all of us, particularly those outside. If you want to be a part of that process, we can use all kinds of help. Even if you can't make meetings, you want to, you know, put in a little time on the computer, or write a letter, or just find out more, give a call, 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
So here we are downtown nearing 7 o'clock on April 6th, 2011. It's a Wednesday afternoon, getting chilly and windy downtown after a sunny day. And this is, actually it's about 7:20. This is a bunch of plunkers who are plunking illegally with an open display case in front of Marini's. We're talking a pretty big group, violin, bass, viol.
And it's illegal because it is completely illegal with or without the permission of the cafe owner to play any music with an open guitar case in front of any of the many street cafes that litter the avenue. Street cafes, however, often have this because police ignore them unless either their complaints or the police don't like them there for some reason. So it allows for massive selective enforcement. Panhandlers, on the other hand, of course, are run off. Musicians that are considered to be, for one reason or another, or artists who are there who are not the favored few, get run off. And it puts everything in the hands of the police and the private anonymous complainant. It's a nasty system and has nothing to do with democratic process or equal treatment under the law.
Banjo, some bizarre-looking guitars. And they've adopted the crowd of passersby listening. They're hanging within 10 feet of a bench as well, shockingly enough. We're talking about a group of six people. Luckily not being harassed by the local police or the hosts. And further up the street near Borders, there was a jeweler with a long table. And on a cold day, he was reading a book, kind of walking back and forth without any apparent customers, but hey.
Hello.
And we have some more musicians coming up here in front of the Bubble Lounge or across from Urban Outfitters. This looks like a couple of people I know. It looks like Swami and Valerie Christie, Vision Song Valerie, strumming away here with their big guitars. Let's listen to these two here and see what we can learn.
Nine, purple berries.
I've been eating them for 6 or 7 weeks now. Haven't got sick once.
We have a humorous story from Ricardo Lopez here, who's playing his guitar in his usual fashion in front of New Leaf Market. It's now about 8:10. What's this about St. Francis Soup Kitchen giving you the boot and then re-inviting you?
It's okay. You know what? We've been re-invited in, so it's all okay. You know what I really want to talk about, though, tonight? Because the news, all of the Murdoch stations not covered it, and I think all of us have to take note of the wonderful things that have happened in Wisconsin. I'm really happy about that. It should be on all of the news stations, but Murdoch and Fox News want to ignore the workers' revolt, if you want to call it, where they've elected a progressive judge over an old-time hardcore Republican hardliner. It'd be like beating one of California's great standards, like Willie Brown or Jerry Brown even, and she beat him. It's just fantastic. All the progressives just landslid against the super uber conservative Tea Partiers they had in there, and who knows? I'm very excited about what's happening. It's all over the Midwest. This is happening in all of those states where they're being cheated.
And in California?
Hopefully we'll see what happens in California, but it certainly is making me feel like I need to, you know, do a little door-to-door, you know, maybe making signs, maybe cleaning up the political headquarters, but doing a little political work.
We'll be expecting to see your name in State House lights.
Yep, you know, or at least get me up to some Huff meetings.
I can't do that. Only you can do that.
That's right. That's right. Maybe Huff is a good place to start political activity. Thanks for dropping by, Robert.
Thank you, Ricardo. That was Ricardo.
Always a pleasure.
And I'm trying to look at the latest update. There is an April 28th, why the recount in Wisconsin. And that, I guess, is still going on for Justice David Prosser versus challenger Joanne Kloppenburg. Kloppenburg, I think, was the Democrat. Prosser was the Republican, kind of connected with the repressive governor of the state who pushed through the anti-union bill, which provoked initially a lot of large continuous protests at the county, I should say at the state legislature, but seems to have faded away into the mist, unlike the crowds in Egypt or Yemen or, for that matter, in Libya, who are still standing up and fighting or standing up and standing up. Apparently, if the Democratic Party and the union bosses say one thing, the people sadly, or routinely and robotically do what they're supposed to do. And, you know, when Obama makes a strategic announcement about killing an unarmed dialysis guy around his wives and bumping off one of them as well, everybody rejoices, and it's perfectly okay. It's amazing to me what's going on in this country these days. So, but I don't have any word on the recount in Wisconsin. I don't think it's happened yet, though they've begun recounting. State law requires the recount to wrap up by May 9th, so it's coming up. Now, officials could ask for an extension if things are slow. And I guess last Wednesday in April or thereabouts was the first day of the recount, and only 500 of the state's 3,500 voting districts reported any results. Could drag into August, according to this, which would prevent Prosser, I think they're both probably bad guys, but probably the worst guy, one's a man, one's a woman, would be prevented from starting his new term on the Supreme Court. That would change the power sway in Wisconsin's highest court from 4-3 conservative majority to a 3-3 draw. You know, in spite of all these legislative diversions and judicial elections, I am really far more impressed with commentary made by a guy called Alan Nern on Democracy Now! On Monday, for those who heard it or read it online. I'm going to kind of jump back to that particular statement that he made. I think it was really very moving, and actually went straight to the guts of the issue. And I'm going to see if I can find it again. It was the it was May 2nd, and it was let's see, do I have the right guy? Let's see. Yeah, here it is. One killer killing another. I'm going to play this now. I'm sure many of you who listen to Democracy Now! Heard it, but it's worth listening to again. It's coming. Be patient.
On the city of Ahmedabad.
I wanted to bring Alan Nairn into this conversation. Your response to the news and what you think this could mean. Could this mean the end of the U.S. war with Afghanistan?
I don't think it will. It should. It definitely should be an occasion for...
We're talking about the murder of Osama bin Laden.
On a much bigger scale than Afghanistan. The first thing that struck me was seeing the Americans out in the streets celebrating outside the White House, outside the old World Trade Center site, people cheering, people exultant. And while some of that may come from bloodlust, I think a lot of it comes from a sense of justice. People like justice. They want to see it. And in this case, I think many people have the feeling, well, he got what he deserved. This was a man who had massacred civilians. He got what he deserved. And there's a lot of truth to that. But if we recognize that someone who is willing to kill civilians en masse, someone who is willing to send young people out with weapons and bombs to, as President Obama put it, see to it that a family doesn't have a loved one sitting at the dinner table anymore, see to it that a child and a parent never meet again. If we say that someone like that deserves to die, then we have to follow through on that idea. And we have to recognize, okay, if these things really are so enormous, we have to stop them. Killing bin Laden does not stop them. Bin Laden is dead, but the world is still governed by bin Ladens. People cheer because they thought they saw justice, but this was not justice delivered by, a kind of rough justice delivered by victims. This was one killer killing another. A big killer, the United States government, killing another, someone who's actually a smaller one, bin Laden. And the bin Laden doctrine that to take out the CIA office that was at the World Trade Center, it's okay to blow up the whole World Trade Center, to teach Americans a lesson, it's okay to slaughter thousands of Americans. That doctrine lives on in the American White House, in the American Pentagon. You know, every day, and in seats of authority all over the world, every day the U.S., directly with its own forces, or indirectly through its proxy forces, its clients, is killing at a minimum dozens of people. I mean, just since Obama came in the one limited area of drone strikes in Pakistan, something like 1,900 have been killed just under Obama. And that started decades before 9/11. We have to stop these people, these powerful people like Obama, like Bush, like those who run the Pentagon, and who think it's okay to take civilian life. And it doesn't seem that they can be stopped by normal routine politics. Because under the American system, as in most other systems, people don't even know this is happening.
And this is the key part of the speech that makes it different than almost any other news report, not just on the subject of the murder of Osama bin Laden, but also of the general discussion of what to do around the issue of stopping the war in Afghanistan, saying no to Obama's and Bush's wars, fighting back against the destruction of constitutional principles and so forth. This is a new, although in a way an old, response to the problem, and one that's very, very bold and very courageous and yet very thoughtful.
People know the face of bin Laden. They know the evil deeds that he's done. They see that he's dead, and they say, oh, great, we killed bin Laden. But they don't see the other 20, 30, 50, 100 people who the U.S. killed that day, many of them children, many of them civilians. If they did, they probably wouldn't be out in the street cheering about those deaths. You know, we've got to stop this practice. And Americans aren't doing it. Egyptians, Tunisians are doing their part. They've risen up against the repression they face. I think we need an American uprising if we're to put a stop to this kind of killing of innocent people. And we need an American Romero, someone like Archbishop Romero of Salvador, who in the face of massacres, of daily massacres of what in the end was more than 70,000 Salvadorans, stood up and said to the army of his country, stop the repression. Defy your orders to kill, because there's a higher principle. About a little more than a week ago, I was in El Salvador and visited Romero's old home, which I'd never been to before, and saw that on his bookshelf, he had Why Not the Best, a campaign book by Jimmy Carter, which he'd apparently been reading. Romero wrote to Jimmy Carter in his capacity as the Archbishop in 1980, asking Carter to stop supporting the Salvadoran military that was slaughtering his people. And from what I know of Romero, he probably really believed that Carter would respond. He didn't. Carter kept sending the aid, and within weeks, Romero himself was assassinated by death squad that had originated from U.S. Backing. Writing letters didn't work in that case, and it doesn't work here. You know, we've got to put a stop to this. Bin Laden is dead, and bin Ladenism, if you want to call it that, should die also.
We're going to break and come back to this discussion. Alan Nair, an award-winning journalist. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by a former...
For those who want to hear that again or read the transcript, because there is a transcript of this particular statement by Alan Nairn, N-A-I-R-N, on Obama's targeted killing of bin Laden. And I call it murder, because he wasn't tried. He needs to be tried. He needed to be convicted. It needed to be done publicly. It needed to be done with proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Otherwise, it simply becomes a rallying cry for American imperialism intervening wherever the hell they want to intervene against whoever they want to designate as terrorists. We need to know what actually went down. We need to know whether the Taliban did agree to, you know, to turn him and other Al-Qaeda people over in October of 2001, and was whether that was turned down by the Bush administration, as has been claimed by a number of diplomats, and I guess has been revealed in some cables. we don't know any of this, and now we have to find it out secondhand. I mean, there's a lot of how did Osama die and what was going on here and how involved were the Pakistanis and was it the palace or was it a moldy old house? And there's, you know, there's a whole bunch of discussion there. But the basic issue is whether we're going to stand up and say no to the current presidential policy of essentially, well, they've had it for years, but now it's become very explicit of being able to murder whoever they choose without any kind of even token judicial process. To hold people indefinitely for the rest of their lives, to murder women and children in the course of supposedly going after the terrorists. It's an obscenity that should be hard to even talk about, and it shows you how insensitized I've become that I can be able to just rattle it off and move on to the next subject. Going to be play a little more of my standard musical stuff, and then I'll be back. Again, if you want to call in, the number is 427-3772.
I'm taking the leader off of the wreck and shoving it into my arm. Wherever I feel life is coming on too strong. They left me in the clinic full of cynical and motherfucking bureaucrats. And they're the kind of dingbats are living on the tracks, but the tracks in my arm. Said it all depends on which side the tracks you're on. So telling me what to wear and telling me cut my hair and trying to convince me that they really, really care about my health and about my wealth. But till they built the stealth, cause everybody's just looking out for that. So then I ask him, can I have a clean needle? He say, hell no. That's illegal, it's a crime. Yeah. To be broke in America, see, it's a crime. To be black in America, come on, y'all. Brothers in the poorhouse who can't afford more house. Politicians nervous, it's the only free service they provide. You wanna go inside, there's a hot meal waiting for it. A deal, we can score you on a bed for a night or two. Or 3 or 4 months. They say they locking us up in a cell to protect us from ourselves. It smells like they got another plan in storehouse, or should I say warehouse, full of niggas and other misfits that couldn't turn tricks in the courthouse. Nah, it's a justice whorehouse, and it's a crime. Yeah. To be broke in America, see, it's a crime. Yeah, to be broke in America, come on, y'all. Shakur and Geronimo Pratt by MC International is fighting for political. But if you're analytical, you know it's much more critical than that. Percentages black is really, really whack. Can I kick a few facts? Yes, 6% in college from living on the block, 25% in prison, the school of hard knocks, 50% in poverty is living on a rock. 5,000 brothers on a death row box. Boom, 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 boom. They say the punishment is capital for those who lack in capital. Because a public defender can't remember the last time that a brother wasn't treated like an animal. They say they blame it on a song when someone kills a cop. What music did they listen to when they bombed Iraq? Well, give me one example so I could take a sample. There's no need to play it backwards if you want to hear the devil. Because music's not the problem. It didn't cause a bombing. But maybe they say listen to the songs of my people. Starving. Ooh, yeah. Because it's a crime. It's a crime the way they're killing my people here in America.
And that, of course, was Michael Franti, Crime to be Broke in America. And it brings us right back full circle to the Board of Supervisors' vote, 5-0, to approve recommendations from the Planning Commission on medical marijuana dispensary regulation. And I'm, again, I don't have the final document. I have the document presented to them, but it doesn't mention in any news stories that were any modifications made. So I'm going to read the document that was presented, at least the parts of it that I find interesting. And I'm going to kind of assume that these parts were passed. Otherwise, I know our vigilant news agencies would have let us know otherwise, right? But, of course, that's not true. Still, there's some interesting sections in this document which were actually there when I discussed these issues in past shows and discussed the Planning Commission's initial drafts of this. One of the most interesting particular portion of the regulation that I found most applicable to our show listeners or the people that we talk about on our show, poor and low-income folks and homeless people, is a section. It is numbered 14. I think it's 14G. A low-income patient participation plan that fully describes and documents how low-income patients are provided assistance and access to cooperative membership, medical marijuana, and cooperative services. The availability of low-income patient assistance and access shall be advertised in a prominent facility location to increase member awareness and participation. A cooperative shall not, A, unreasonably deny membership in the cooperative to any county resident, or B, unreasonably deny access to a cooperative member's prescribed medication. The demonstrated financial inability of a cooperative member to pay for medical marijuana shall not, in and of itself, constitute a reasonable basis for denying membership in the cooperative or denying or otherwise limiting the member's access to medical marijuana appropriate for the member's medical needs. The county may audit the membership and financial records of the cooperative at any time. Current copies of the management plan and other cooperative records shall be available for inspection within a reasonable period of time by county code compliance staff, sheriff's office staff, and other assigned county staff. So that means, if that section was passed without modification, and I suspect it probably was, although it's quite a radical section, it means that if you don't have any money, you can walk into one of these places, get on their list, and demand some medication. And they can't deny that to you. They have to provide assistance and access. At least that seems to be what this section says. And if you are being denied, you have a right to complain about this to the county authorities and demand that this law be enforced. This is something that Huff, I think, can look into. We can start investigating the 40-odd county dispensaries and see if they are, in fact, living up to this. Now, in a way, it's kind of like requiring that grocery stores and pharmacies serve poor people with what they need. Sounds like socialism to me, man, or even communism, in the sense that people are required to provide services to all members of the community, regardless of whether they can afford to pay for it or not, which I think, you know, the community should do. The question, though, is whether private organizations can afford to do this and remain in business, or whether they're going to have to adopt the usual discriminatory, you ain't got no money, you don't get nothing here, buddy, approach, which, of course, is standard in capitalist Santa Cruz. We're going to have to see what actually comes of that, and that should be an issue, perhaps, at the next Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting. Huff has in the past raised the issue of how medical marijuana is denied to poor people, how medical marijuana dispensaries were shut down by the city's regulations between 2000 and 2005 in spite of the wonderful WHAM lawsuit against the feds and the wonderful activities of the city supporting WHAM's federal lawsuit locally. No other dispensaries were allowed inside the city in the most practical way. The zoning regulations made it essentially impossible for them to do that, although they theoretically could if they could find landlords where they could squeeze in at certain points. And, of course, when certain places did open up, like the Pacific Coast Cooperative on Pacific Avenue, they were immediately shut down by the planning department. So the question is going to be, how are these 40-odd dispensaries in the county actually treating poor people? And we'll have to look into that. There were some other aspects of the regulation that are interesting, that some of which I agree with, some of which I don't. They are not allowing advertising of medical marijuana except that which it goes exclusively to cooperative collective members, which would be kind of hard to do except as, I guess, an email to people who are on an email list. Each cooperative is allowed a website with the name, location, and phone number of the cooperative. Such websites must include the cooperative's bylaws, membership criteria, and operating procedures, but may not include the display of a sales price to non-members for any marijuana product that is dispensed by the cooperative. So it could be that this has been modified, actually liberalized. I think previously there was simply, although I didn't read an earlier draft, I read the Sentinel's description of the earlier draft. It said no advertising was allowed except the name of the dispensary and where it is and maybe its phone number. There is a requirement the cooperative shall prohibit loitering by persons within 50 feet of any entryway into or exit from the cooperative, which, of course, they can't do if people are on public property. You got a right to loiter all you want. So this is, I guess, if it's on their own private property. But that's not specified. So if you look to see security thugs wandering around harassing poor people who happen to be in the neighborhood hanging out. And essentially, you can tell them to leave you alone. And if they have any problem, get their name, their badge number, their boss's name, and so forth. And if they arrest you, for what? I guess they can probably get the sheriffs to cooperate in looking for old warrants, which is a favorite approach. Anyway, that's a provision of this I don't like. Hours of operation are limited for all marijuana dispensaries to 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m., which I think is a lot of time, but I don't see why there should be hour limitations on when people can buy things. Of 7-Elevens aren't limited, bars aren't that limited. It seems to me to be, again, the paranoid sense that marijuana is especially dangerous drug that needs special regulations is a pernicious and dangerous myth that has ruined, I would say, probably millions, if not hundreds of thousands of lives, and impacted many more people. There's an interesting provision that a cooperative shall not provide an on-site location for doctors or medical professionals to write recommendations. I don't see why not. nor is the product allowed to be smoked, ingested, or consumed within the cooperative or within 50 feet of the building in which the cooperative is located. So that means if you're a medical marijuana patient, you have to get 50 feet away from the building to use your medication. There's an exception for employees and volunteer staff that possess a medical doctor's recommendation that they can smoke or ingest. Why not people who purchase, you know? I guess it's, again, to feed into and pander to the paranoia and peculiar peccadilloes of people who are reefer madness victims who believe in this absurd claim that marijuana is dangerous as a drug, whereas alcohol and tobacco are, you know, okie dokie, and the regular prescription drugs are just fine and dandy. This is, as I said, dangerous nonsense that it's intelligent people on the Board of Supervisors should not be putting into law. Let's see what else we got here. This is all available online for people to look at. And I'm trying to see if there's anything else. You know, it's long, and I hate to go into all the details of this. There's some current exemptions for existing clubs. But I don't really know how much of this was actually passed verbatim. I suspect it all was, because there was no mention made of any changes. But I don't know. And I don't hear, I'm hoping that perhaps we can get Craig Canada on the line to talk about these issues. We'll give him another call and see if he's lurking or loitering near the telephone, which it's possible he is. Let's see if I can raise the that medical marijuana guy. And there we go. We're ringing him now. See if he's around. Of course, he may be listening to the show and ducked out for a quick toke. Or actually, I don't know if you can duck out. No, looks like he's not answering.
Craig Canada.
Oh well.
He's not available.
So we'll leave Craig in the privacy of his home, and perhaps he'll be talking about these issues when his show comes up, which will be on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. And I recommend people listen in. I have not yet listened to one of his shows. I think I may have listened to one. I just space out the fact that he's on, because I'm on earlier in the day. I'm on usually 9:30 to 1 o'clock, 9:30 in the morning to 1 o'clock every Sunday. So I generally have kind of had enough of free radio. I want to just get away from it and do something else. And that's too bad, because Craig has a lot of information about medical marijuana, and I encourage people to listen in. He's also been homeless in Santa Cruz. He's one of the few people who's gotten a dismissal of a sleeping ban citation. That's the law that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep after 11 o'clock at night on any public property in Santa Cruz because of the shelter's restrictions on the use of medical marijuana. That was in the court of Deneen Guy until she was approached, apparently, I suspect, by authorities who told her, no, you don't want to do that. And so when the identical facts came up in a second case, she found the person guilty with no explanation as to why she had changed her mind on the obvious medical necessity situation that requires people, if they have medication they need to use, that and they're being denied that at the shelter, that the shelter cannot not claim that they offered them a place if they, you know, as long as you don't take your medicine, we'll let you in. Well, that's not a very good reason or excuse. Let's continue with some of these interviews that I played, probably did play before, but again, we've been off the air for so long, and it's so good to be back on the air that I'm going to be playing some of them again now and invite you to call in again at 427-3772, area code 831-427-3772.
Mayor
with a rather discordant musical group. Your name, sir?
Scott.
And Scott, you have a group, your band of merry musical malcontents. What have you been singing?
Oh, Mel Brooks movie tunes.
Give us an example.
We're men in tight, tight tights. But don't go messing around or else we'll put out your lights. We may look like pansies, but don't get us wrong or else we'll put up a fight. Something along those lines.
Something along those lines. I want to thank you for that brief rendition.
Thank you.
Be seeing you.
We were also singing the Spanish Inquisition, but I won't go into that.
We won't get into that. How about the Santa Cruz Inquisition?
We're working on that song.
I want to hear it when you finish.
We'll finish. We'll work on it.
Thank you, Scott. Well, it's Thursday, April 8th, 2011. I'm down here on a windy day. It's supposed to be showers on and off on Pacific Avenue outside of closing borders. And I'm watching a guy making a few signs. Here's one that says, veteran, need help to get back to my family. $40 for food, bus ticket home. Anything will help. And then there's a biblical quote, Act 20:35. And you got some fatigues on. You got some nice-looking boots there. And you're making a new sign here. Looks like it's a similar sign. Got a Desert Storm hat on. How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
And have you been here a while, or how's Santa Cruz treating you?
Good so far.
Okay, good. I see we have a first alarm stranger here, as well as a host, who are doing their usual patrol of the mall.
Hope the sun holds out for a while, yeah?
Yeah, it should.
And it sounds like a friendly interchange between a host, a first alarm security guard, and a fellow trying to get enough money to, according to his sign, get home.
Good morning.
How's it going? I got a couple people with extremely big backpacks. So no hassles this morning, hopefully. Good, good. All right.
Oh, you can change your sign, huh?
I was
looking
to
see what was going on.
And it's, there's a couple of, wow, there's three old-time guitarists across the street. And Mark.
And that noise, of course, is the wind on Pacific Avenue. My apologies for the bad, difficult-to-hear stuff, but it is a windy day.
On the mandolin.
There's some people that look at you that keep it down. This guy's shaking too. You change the words,
and we're exchanging tips on how to actually get folks to pay some attention to human need on the streets. So, where are you from, if I may ask?
East Coast.
And where on the East Coast?
West Virginia.
How does West Virginia, is it a lot different than here in Santa Cruz?
A lot different.
How would people be treated in, let's say, there if they were trying to do what you were doing, let's say, to get back to the West Coast?
Good. People are nice there. A little down to earth.
I've asked you this before, but at Santa Cruz, you haven't received any hassles from police or from hosts or anybody, or have you been? How's it been for you?
I was following my sign down by Denny's and got harassed by the cops down by Denny's over there. Oh, that's okay here, I guess.
What was the circumstance? Did they ticket you, or did they just sort of come up and start doing a police thing?
Got a ticket for it.
And what did they say? Did they warn you that what you were doing was something they didn't want you to do?
Yeah, they told me it's legal for us in Santa Cruz.
Did you get the ticket after the warning or before?
Before.
So, in other words, you didn't know that you were violating any of the local laws?
Nope.
And what did they tell you was the reason they were giving you the ticket? What specifically was their problem?
For flying a sign.
And what did your sign say? You're showing me the sign, which I just read. And you're making another sign, veteran, almost home, just need a little more help, perhaps, a little more of your help. So were they sympathetic at all? Did they express any concerns?
They just said that it's illegal to fly a sign over there by Denny's, I guess.
Did they say there had been a complaint?
No, no complaints.
And how long have you been in town trying to move on?
About 4 days now, 5 days now.
And where are you coming from?
Down south.
How's it going down there compared to up here?
Much easier down south.
Huh.
And how about the citizens? Are they responding with money? Are they responding with indifference? Are they responding with hostility? Are they responding with tape recorders trying to record you?
It's okay. They help when they can, you know, because money's tight, you know, this time of year. So, I mean, they help when they can, you know.
So you're a veteran of what campaign? Where are you coming from in that regard?
Desert Storm, sir.
That was about 20 years ago.
The second Desert Storm.
The second Desert Storm. So we're talking 2003?
Well, 96, 97, 98, uh-huh. And then 2003.
Uh-huh. All right, anything you want to say to the radio folks out there?
Help your veterans out.
Yeah, you want to give us a name, a first name perhaps?
David.
Thank you, David.
And it has to be said, though, there were Clinton's killing sanctions against Iraq in 96 through 98. That supposedly murdered 500,000 to 100,000 children over in Iraq over the period of a decade when the Iraqi sanctions against medicine and other vital imports was leveled on the country. I don't know that there was anything called Desert Storm or a specific U.S. intervention, but I didn't go into more detail with him. Additionally, there was no Desert Storm in 2002. There was Operation Iraqi Freedom, or Iraqi Liberation, Operation Iraqi Liberation, or OIL, as some would call it. They renamed it Freedom. It was more like OAF for the OAFish approach. So, you know, it's possible that our panhandling man may have been violating the law that says you can't hold up a sign that lies, unlike, let's say, politicians do all the time. And apparently the White House did for the last few days around the Osama murder. In terms of saying what the circumstances were and then changing its story. It's okay for them. They're not going to get prosecuted or even criticized, really. But if you do that seeking funds to move on, even if you are or aren't a vet, that's a violation of our Santa Cruz laws in order to give the police the power to move you along. Let's hear more of the exciting Santa Cruz situation.
Rhetoric, musical criminals who are doing some strumming.
Please don't!
And that's a message from one of the musicians.
And there is some good music downtown on the mall, and there are a few guitarists who continue in spite of the increasingly difficult climate down there, increasingly arbitrary climate. It's really hard to tell. There aren't a lot of police in evidence, except suddenly you'll find two or three squad cars going around the block regularly. And, of course, when they do show up, they show up in force. So it's an interesting conundrum. Let's hear a very brief one of my old favorite songs from Just Kidding, a band of involving Skidmark Bob and Phil Free and others from the 90s. Dare I say, whoops.
we're down here at the town clock. The wind is blowing away the signs. It's April 9th, 2011. Our man is doing bike power to power the speakers of the New Priorities rally, which is about to begin at noon. But passing by with his pooch is
Muhammad Malik.
And Muhammad, I first was advised that you had encountered some serious difficulties by Bhakta or Swami, who posted something of yours to me from Facebook. What was that all about?
I had some difficulties with a police officer.
Officer Warren, perhaps?
Yes.
The very same.
B. Warren, I believe.
Yes.
I was attempting to walk my dog off leash, and he decided to intercede. He told me to put a leash on, and I did. But at the same time, I said that I didn't want to be doing it. So he pulled over and started writing me a ticket, and I told him that I did not want to sign the ticket. So he attempted to arrest me, and I told him that I did not want to be arrested. And so he beat me up and threw me in the cop car.
Now, how exactly did he beat you? Where did he strike you? What was the nature of the injury?
At first, he was choking me, and he got me down onto the ground before the backup showed up. And then at least three male officers all basically jumped on top of me, and at least one of them was kneeing me in the side repeatedly. I didn't have any, like, physical damage to the point where I needed to seek medical help, but I had scrapes on my face. I still got cuts on my hands, and my neck was extremely sore the next day.
When did this happen?
It was about 2 weeks ago.
And where did this happen?
On Cedar and Lincoln.
And what time of day?
Around 5 p.m.
Any witnesses?
My friend Josh. And they took a statement from one other fellow who was, my friend told me he was on my side. And there was somebody taking pictures while I was being kneed in the side. But he ran off before a statement could be taken because the cops started yelling at him and told him to go away. So he did.
So you're intending to do some kind of a protest around this issue?
Maybe not like a conventional protest, but I am definitely protesting. I haven't gotten a court date for the actual trial yet, so I have a while until I actually have to go up against the court. So I'm going to plan it out.
What are you charged with?
I got a ticket for walking my dog off leash and resisting arrest.
And how long were you held in jail?
They only kept me for about 6 hours, which was pretty nice compared to other places.
What time were you let out in the middle of the night?
This is going to be a break.
Yes, check. Around midnight.
So long.
We've been talking with, again, your name is
Muhammad Malik.
No,
and how can folks contact you if they want to?
We got Obama to
my email
to a song.
Is
we got to be grifted.
Brian Gett. BRIANGOETT at gmail.com.
Brian Gett at gmail.com. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
All right. So, Brian, I see you have on a kind of a camouflage U.S. Army jacket that says Gott, G-O-E-T-G. That's your last name.
It's pronounced Get.
Thank you. I got Get, I guess. So hopefully I'll get Get. So you are an Army man?
No. I never was at heart. I was lied to at the age of 17 and tricked into joining the Army. And it took me about 5 years to finally get out without a bad discharge, and now I finally am. I'm getting a medical discharge because it had to come to that.
And what kind of medical problem do you have?
I've been diagnosed with bipolar.
And were you stationed abroad at any point? Or
no, I had about 9 month training period, and I've been in the reserve since then. They've basically just been wasting my time and my life.
Well, how can you say that about our army?
Because that's what happened.
Thank you, Mr. Gett.
Mohammed Malik is the name.
Mr. Mohammed Marg.
Malik.
Malik. Eventually, we'll try to get it right. But the news media, we're notoriously bad, so I make no apologies. Probably
don't
should.
Expect any apologies.
Indeed. Officer Warren and I go way back.
That's good.
Anyway, thank you for the account.
Thank you.
All right.
And this is at a Saturday rally, which is kind of a combination of a number of concerns against the incarceration of Bradley Manning, against the arrest and house arrest of Julian Assange, against the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and elsewhere, against the war on the poor in Santa Cruz. Every Saturday, Steve Plaich, a regular contributor to this show and an activist who's working to provide a homeless legal assistance project every Monday for those who are interested at the Red Church, Calvary Episcopal Church, between 5 and 7, if you want to go down and check that out. He does a solitary vigil against the wars, and on this occasion it wasn't solitary. It was a number of folks joined him. It was a beautiful day. Surprisingly small turnout, considering the fact that our previous turnouts on such events had been very large, considering the fact that it was in the middle of rainstorms. We had 30 to 40, 50, 60 people at the town clock. But what you're going to be hearing now are more interviews during this relatively small rally. And one of the speakers was Mohammed Malik, and he had scheduled a protest for later that month, but I heard nothing more of it. I'm going to actually send him an email to find out how things are going with him, and if he has more information, perhaps he'll be talking about it, or I'll be talking about it on a future show.
Before we go,
Elliot Gunnar Grissel III.
Hey, Gunsky for short, or
yeah, or Grissel,
or Grissel. Hey there, Grissel. It's Get G O E T. No, it's Mohammed Mal M A
M A L E K
Malik. Mohammed Malik M A L E K.
Yes.
And that there's an account of the incident post still posted on Facebook, or is that going down?
It's going down. I'm deleting my Facebook.
And why is that?
Because Facebook sucks.
Is it going to be put up somewhere else?
I'll figure that out.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You could post it on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, perhaps. So it's about 12:05. Fat cats are stealing our future. Sign has just arrived with a little doggy. We also have a very windy day, and it's kind of hard to hold up the signs. They say the large sign says "New priorities, war is wrong, wage peace." You, of course, are hearing the musical composition of.
I didn't hear you say.
Tony Cuspa, I believe.
Well, now, my name is now Dr. Plutonium.
Dr. P.
My first name is Plu, my last name is and the middle name is Tony. I'm Plutonium.
Ooh, it sounds like Balonium to me.
Yeah, okay. Well, I forgot what I want to say.
What did you want to say?
I did have something.
You actually were singing an interesting song there. We heard some of it, of course, but...
I like this last verse first. Plutonium used to be bad for your health, but why should you fear what can't be felt or smelt? So we prioritized your health below wealth. We used your tax monies to kill you by stealth, and it's so long. It's been good to know you. So long. There's no net below you. So long. We got Ayatollah Obama to issue this fatwa song. And we got to be grifting along. I never forgave our good president for issuing a fatwa, which was to kill an American without benefit of kidnap, trial, and prosecution, you know,
for his own good.
Well, he's the first president. Every president probably has done it. But he's the first one that announced it to the world that he was going to do it.
He's proud.
Well, yeah.
The audacity of...
Okay, well, I sang that same song with a slightly different form on your radio show just before you, you know.
Yeah.
Tangerine Dream. And what I wanted to say when I came up here was they've changed the mantra for real estate from location, location, location to radiation, radiation, radiation. There's lots of people who can't come back home anymore near the power plants, and they also can't grow any crops anymore forever. Cesium is on the
ground. You bring your Geiger counter with you? But
no, I'm going to buy one, though, no question. Check my McDonald's burgers before I eat them.
Thank you, Tony. That was Tony Cuspa.
So it is.
And Tony Cuspa actually was invited to be on the show today to sing the extended version of his song as Dr. Plutonium. I wasn't able to reach him by phone. His number had expired, and he may be on my Sunday show. He's got a great voice. He was probably one of the reasons I was convicted of singing Downtown, because he sang with me in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz about a year and 3 months ago. We're still appealing that case. We actually just turned in the first brief in the appeal on Monday, and a tip of the hat to Ray Glock Grunike, or Grinning Ray Grunike, as we call him, and to stand-up Steve Plaich, who helped put that together. Thank you both for helping me in that, in my improper. That means I'm doing it myself, but with a lot of legal sort of in-the-background help. I don't have an attorney against the conviction for unreasonably disturbing noise for essentially a protest that involved tabling in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, doing street interviews, singing a few songs, and getting petitions signed, which became the basis for a complaint by a day sleeper, Sean Riley, above the Bookshop Santa Cruz, facilitated and encouraged by a police officer, Officer Schoenfeld. And that whole story is told if you're interested in pursuing it on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website. If you view Bing or Google for a Norse, N-O-R-S-E, you can find some of my past stories, or Downtown Norse might do it. You can also find lots of stuff on this at Becky Johnson's website. Becky is a longtime activist and writer who's actually recently been covering the Peace Camp 2010 trials, which have been going on for the last week and will be going on, I guess, into the next month, at least two more of them. One, another trial for Gary Johnson for lying down on the sidewalk in front of City Hall, which is an infraction on the first offense, and on the second offense can be a misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in jail and $1,000 fine. It was one of the harassment police charges used when the police closed off City Hall entirely to the small group of peaceful protesters who had even provided their own porta-potty at night in trying to draw the city and the city council's attention to the criminalization of the poor at night. And because in Santa Cruz there is no legal place for 95% of the homeless to sleep, and yet they face, I guess it's more than $140 tickets now. It used to be $97, but I think the bail has gone up. Haven't gotten the latest on that, but I did see one ticket under the municipal code 6.36010A, which is the sleeping ban. And it was more than the $97 that I thought was the standard fine. Anyway, Gary's going to go to trial, and Linda LeMaster, Lighthouse Linda, as I call her, former head of the Homeless Issues Task Force, former chair of the city's Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, a very articulate writer who has her own blog, Linda's Hearth. You can go to and read her stuff. She's also going to trial in about a month with attorney Jonathan Gettleman defending her. Ed Fry will be defending Gary Johnson, I believe, at this upcoming trial, which has been postponed a week for those of you regular court watchers, because the city attorney, Caio Arellano, apparently was either vacationing or retreating or doing something out of town and didn't make the court appearance. And rather than getting sanctioned for not showing up, as would probably happen with a defense lawyer or a defendant, he was simply excused. And the trial was put ahead a week instead of being combined with other charges as Ed Fry wanted to do. Ed is Gary's attorney, as I said. Judge Gallagher, I believe, was in Gallagher's court, put it simply kicked it ahead a week, and so that'll be coming down the pike next week. This very absurd and rare charge of lying on the sidewalk. the reason somebody lies down on the sidewalk is because they made it illegal for them to be elsewhere and then still be a part of a political protest at City Hall, which was what the point was. You can see retrospectively how repressive things have come in Santa Cruz. In 2007, we had sleepouts all over the City Hall lawn, and that went on for a week. People were finally told to leave, and they did. This group of people, however, didn't go on the lawn. They were on the kind of the concrete area right in front of City Hall, which is across from the main library, for those of you who know the area. It's a small area. They had their signs with them. They had a table. They had sleeping bags. And instead of ticketing them for sleeping, which would have allowed them a necessity defense, since people have to sleep at night, and there was no legal shelter on any of those nights for those people, or if there were one or two or three beds, they couldn't accommodate everyone, and so there was not available any realistic, meaningful shelter for them or for the hundreds and hundreds of other homeless people who are outside and who are shelterless and yet criminal because they try to go to sleep where they can. So the city moved to impose even more restrictive procedures, laws, regulations, closing hours on the property around City Hall, and set up Klieg lights and moved in to with kind of two or three times nightly expeditions on occasion, although it was mostly just, I guess, once or twice nightly, ticketing people, harassing them, seizing their property. And it's giving some people dozens of tickets because they said, no, we're not going to abandon our First Amendment rights. And four of those people were convicted in court on Tuesday, I guess it was. And the case came back. They were convicted of illegal lodging for simply being in front of the county building with protest signs at midnight and sleeping there. They face up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. They'll be sentenced on Monday, I believe it's at 8:30 in the morning, in Department 2, for those who want to check it out early next week. That's what's going on then. There's some talk of a funeral for freedom protest that will maybe be happening around the same time. I'll try to give you more details on Sunday if I have that information, and we'll see what's cooking with that. If you want to read more about Peace Camp 2010 and this situation, you can go to indiebay.org. Indiebay.org is Santa Cruz Indie Media, and it's a website I've either been writing a lot on or transferring the writings of Becky Johnson and Linda LeMaster to on this Peace Camp 2010 trial. And I think a lot of their stuff is really strikes to the core of things. The latest one is Guilty of Sleeping, Final Verdict for 4 of 5 Peace Camp 2010 Defendants by Becky Johnson. And you can go there and read that story. It's an extreme right of the website. Also, Becky Johnson did some very interesting, although I haven't heard the interviews yet, interviews of jury members afterward, who apparently almost found the defendants not guilty. The defendants had to prove 5 elements of a 6-element necessity defense in order to show they were not guilty. Normally, it's the prosecution that has to prove you guilty, but if you want to defend with the so-called necessity defense, you have to show 6 separate things, that there was an emergency or necessity created, that you didn't have to contribute to the emergency, that this was reasonable, you had a reasonable belief that this was happening, that there's a whole series of individual points you have to prove. And apparently, from what I heard, again, this is scuttlebutt, and I've got to actually talk more with Becky about this, because I wasn't there when the jurors, after the verdicts were read, were interviewed in the corridors after the trial was over. And she knows more about this than I do. She's working hard at work as a caretaker these days, and so isn't free to come on the radio at this point. But I'm hoping I can maybe catch some of those interviews before the Sunday show when I come back and have a longer show and can play some of those interviews with the jurors, which may be encouraging in spite of these discouraging verdicts. But again, you can read about some reflections by sympathizers at the website, as well as a lot of nasty comments attacking Becky and me and others, but not really addressing the issues of the needs of people who are poor, the needs of the community to be treated like human beings equally and to get equal justice under the law, and the absurdity of the sleeping ban and these costly trials, which are really a form of local political repression. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hello, Robert. I'm Giorgio.
Hey there, listener. How you doing?
Hartnell College. I'd like to thank you.
Thank you. Oh, you for what?
Well, I asked you about the difference between Sunni and Shia, and you said to me, go to Wikipedia.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
I asked you about the difference between Sunni and Shia.
Yes.
And you said, go to Wikipedia.
Yes, the difference between those two branches of Islam, yeah.
You said go to Wikipedia. I went to Wikipedia.
And
but I have news for you.
Uh-oh, go ahead.
All of Wikipedia is written by two people.
Two people, really?
That's it.
I thought it was available to anybody you wanted to post.
No, that's a myth. That's an urban myth, like alligators.
And who are these two people? Wikipedia, perhaps?
Ryan Coonerty and Mike Rothkid.
Oh, now come on. How can you say
now, Robert,
that?
Listen to me.
All right, I'm listening.
They have overtaken the Wikipedia to advance the cause of the criminal Santa Cruz City Council.
Oh, come. That's our city council.
That's it. No.
How can you say that?
I mean, you are the victim. They are going to execute you.
For
singing on the values. I have to go now do my homework, but you cogitate on this.
I shall think about that.
Yeah, thank you, Bob.
Thank you. And, of course, what our caller is referring to, and he's the only caller of the evening, so thank you, caller, for calling in, is that, indeed, there was some controversy. I don't know about Mike Rotkin, but Ryan Coonerty had posted a glowing Wikipedia statement about his history, his accomplishments as mayor of Santa Cruz, because he's twice been mayor, and he's currently the mayor. And there were some folks who wrote in and corrected the record, pointing out some of his more repressive actions, like the parking lot panic law, the parking garage paranoia law, his support of the sleeping ban, his repressive city council procedures that he uses to cut back debate and discussion. I did get a call today, by the way, from J.M. Brown of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, or the Sent Anal, as I sometimes call it. The local newspaper, or newspaper is a, it passes for the local newspaper, about the what I've called the Heil Krohn or City Council repression case. Heil Krohn is a reference to former Mayor Christopher Krohn, who had me arrested for a silent, fleeting, mock Nazi gesture, indicating I felt he was being very, very repressive towards a peace activist. It was a silent gesture. It was brief. But he chose to have me arrested when I refused to leave the chambers. That's resulted in a massive lawsuit. It's gone on for 9 years. And apparently the Santa Cruz City Council has decided it wants to take this case to the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's adding absurdity to ignorance, and it's also going to be rather humorous in a way, perhaps, except of the money that the Santa Cruz City Council is expending in this whole affair, which goes to the Barisoni firm. That's John Barisoni, city attorney, to argue that I don't have any right to raise my arm silently in the city council chambers because it's indecorous and disrupts the council meeting, which is, of course, nonsense to anyone who looks at the tape. And the fact that we have to spend 9 years just shows how flawed both our legal system and our city council system, and frankly, our community's awareness is that we have to waste time on this kind of stuff. Someone will say, well, why are you wasting the city's time by doing this? And the answer is that it is important to not be frightened and intimidated into censoring yourself when you have a dissenting position. The silence of this country has resulted in the deaths of many, many people abroad. And it is truly said, that old cliche, you know, the only thing evil needs to triumph is the silence of good women and men, which is what we got. I don't know how good we are being silent as we are, but that's the story. Anyway, I've learned that the Santa Cruz City Council apparently is going to be appealing the issue of whether I should be allowed to try in court the three mayors for damages and for violation of civil rights, and whether to overturn the decision of the Ninth Circuit en banc 11-person court, which held that I certainly have a right to a trial, that I've been unfairly denied it twice, and that I need to have that trial. Instead, the city is going to spend tens of thousands of more dollars appealing this decision to the Supreme Court, where if they... I don't think it's very unlikely they're going to accept this case, but it's a possibility. And if it does get accepted, I think it's going to make Santa Cruz a real laughingstock because it's... Well, to me, it's clear that, you know, you have to have the right to characterize a repressive city council as repressive. And you may call it Nazi, you may call it fascist, you may call it Gaddafi-like. These are the rights we all have and have to have, not just in this country, but I think in all countries, but certainly in this country and certainly in this city. So we'll see how that goes. A couple things are happening. There is a Mother's Day peace rally coming up. And it's a Mother's Day peace vigil at 3 p.m. It's happening in front of the Military Recruiting Center, located next to the Burger King and across from the Master Car Wash on 41st Avenue near Clare Street, just as you get off the freeway and head down toward the beach. A lot of parking at the back of the building, on the street behind. County buses do run to the Capitola Mall. It's a ritual and vigil, according to Indy Bay. And its contact person is Sherry Connable, who has been doing this in the past. I often go out to these protests against the military, and she writes about it this way: it's for all the families on the planet who still have loved ones in harm's way, whether by war, by torture, by prison, by rape, by hunger, by homelessness. Please join the peace community of Santa Cruz for a Mother's Day weekend peace vigil. Bring signs, flags, banners, friends, and family. Extras will be available. That's going to be, again, 3 o'clock on Saturday, out there on 41st Avenue, about two blocks away from the freeway. You might want to check that out. There's going to be other stuff coming up, but I'll probably talk about that when I do my Sunday morning show at 9:30 in the morning. I invite you to listen in. And let me see if there's anything I'm missing before I withdraw into the night. So, I'll probably be at this rally on Saturday at 3 o'clock, although you never can tell. I may duck out because, you know, I'm such a big fan of a military. Actually, because I'm such a lazy guy who's got so many other diversions, I let myself be diverted to. I actually put together some other stuff I wanted to read. I don't think I have time to do it. The recruiting center. This is not. I see what the problem here is. The war in Libya, the civil war in Libya, is continuing, and there's been a real debate on this on my show as to what extent is this an uprising as in Egypt and Tunisia, or to what extent is it sort of a U.S. Western power, Al Qaeda, drug crazed, sectarian rising, where the NATO has opportunistically intervened to violate Libyan sovereignty. I mean, there is a controversy because a number of people on the left and a number of people on the right don't like us being there either. Not us. Don't like the U.S. government being in there, and it's. I'm kind of trying to gather new facts about the issue, and I will be talking about that more on Sunday. Similarly, in Syria, there are some people who are reluctantly... They call for reforms in the Syrian regime of Assad, but they also seem to be defending it, based to a large extent in their opposition to U.S., Western power, and Israeli influence in the Middle East, which I can understand and be sympathetic toward, but I don't know if I can defend a dictator like Assad under any circumstances, really. Then there's an interesting issue up in Anchorage, Alaska, where the I think I've talked about this in a previous show, and maybe I'll talk about it on Sunday. There's in a much harsher weather climate. There have been protections suddenly for homeless property up there that we don't have here in Santa Cruz. And those are being discussed and debated. And there's some interesting comments that were made. I guess I did read those on the last show. Although, who knows how few heard them, because, again, this is the first time that really we've been back on the air. And I'm really glad to be back. So I think what I'm going to do is... I did have something I wanted to play, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it because I haven't been able to get my computer up online. But I might be able to. Let's see if I can find what I'm looking for. There is a... I think I may not be able to at this point, unfortunately. And I think I may just have to tip my hat. Oh, here we go. It's... Albuquerque homeless man jailed after moving from dumpster. And I think we have an actual radio or television report on this, which was passed on to me through email. I'm going to see if I can play that now, and it may be coming up. Let's see if we can do that, and we'll see where we're at here. It's a homeless man jailed for moving from dumpster, and let's hear if we've got it. It's a quick segment. And coming up next is going to be, of course, Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs. And I'm still waiting for this thing to come on. It's making all kinds of nice little visual motions. But the story is Charles Matter listed his address as dumpster at 8th and Center in Albuquerque. As a convicted sex offender, he must give the Bernadillo County Sheriff's Department a physical address where he stays, so detectives can keep track of him. He's convicted trying to rape a six-year-old boy. Matter lists the dumpster because he is homeless, but the detectives say Matter moved from the dumpster and didn't report the move within 10 days. This violates his sex offender registration requirements. And this is a significant concern. You might say, oh, these fucking sex offenders. You can get a sex offender label for lots of more trivial things than raping a six-year-old boy. But let me take this particular call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
What is Uncle Dennis? I'm Giorgio. I'm waiting for Uncle Dennis.
Me too.
He is lost.
He's probably a sex offender hiding in a dumpster somewhere, but I don't want to impugn Uncle Dennis.
Now I am doing homework on the difference between shit and shinola. Do you know anything about it?
I've heard that there is a distinction.
There's a what-y?
A distinction. One stinks and the other is distant from that.
Well, I tell you something, Robert. You are no help to the homework population.
Well, you know, those people feel that way.
I
agree.
Cabrillo College. If I don't, I don't know what pig means in English. I'm in trouble.
Well, work on it. You take care. And that was our sometime listener and apparently two-time caller has been two-timing us here. And there is a knock at the door. So I think that means I'm going to sign off with a final number. Let's do the hobo train. And we'll let this hobo guy into the studio. And I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30.
Freeload of hobos. No sir.